Okay, everybody, let's welcome Haven, who's going to share her experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. Go ahead, Haven.
Thank you. My name is Haven, and I am an addict. Lots of addictions. I've been part of the BBA process for about 3.5 years now, going through it myself, and then taking two other people through it, and then leading a workshop last year, starting in October. And so once I was introduced to the Big Book Awakening process, I let go of so much other busyness that I was doing in my program, recognizing that the answer wasn't more. I didn't need to call more, and I didn't need to do more quiet time, and I didn't need to do more writing. I just needed to do like the little bit better. And BBA has really helped me see the way that I was worshiping a sponsor and worshiping a food plan and worshiping the program and worshiping the tools. And all of that was very much a distraction from actually worshiping a higher power. And I didn't know that because I was surrounded. If it gets too noisy, I'll go inside. I'll figure it out. Let me know if you guys can hear what I can hear. Is it noisy? Oh, okay. So I was surrounded by people that were telling me to worship the food plan. And the food plan was so precise that the road was really, really narrow, like a shoestring of what was right. Instead of, letting God into it and saying, is this the right food plan for me? I'm 42. What I need now at 42 is different than what I needed during my twin pregnancy, which was different than what I needed coming in at 31, or and so I have changed, but the food plan didn't. And I just kept trying to make myself mold into what this food plan was instead of letting higher power tell me what it was that I needed. And so when I found Big Book Awakening in the middle of a hellacious relapse 3.5 years ago, I all of a sudden I got surrounded by people that wouldn't tell me what to eat. And I'd say, but what do you eat? And they said, gosh, we'll go to a dietitian, right? The dietitian will tell you. I was like, oh. And again, like I want you to tell me what to eat, because that gives me a sense of safety, but then when it doesn't work, I get to blame you. And so I didn't trust anybody or anything, and I'm beyond human aid, which means that I cannot have a human-made food plan. Everything I do gets run through God. Of course, people can be like the soldiers of God's will, but I run it through, first and foremost through my higher power. I've had a lot of like amazing shifts and changes from the people that I've surrounded myself with that I have met in BBA. And so when I have a problem, the people that are surrounding me now like point me back towards God first and foremost. I love that this is an emotional sobriety meeting, and I've been sober now 12 years. I got sober when I was 15 and was sober for 8.5 years, and then went out for 6 years, and then now I'm back. I got abstinent or into food recovery when I was 17, and then came back when I was 32. And so been back in food recovery for over 10 years. And I don't believe in day ones. I don't think that a day one represents a journey. There is way too much knowledge and spiritual adjustments that are happening that don't get captured in a reset. And so I don't give myself resets anymore. My road is wide, and I've had this like amazing, beautiful freedom with food for over 2 years now, maybe 2.5 years, better than I could have ever dreamed. My road is wide, and it's hand in hand with God instead of just trying harder, right? And that's like my anthem, like just do better, try harder. And so, like, thinking of topics, the things that are coming up for me is yesterday was Father's Day, and I have a false beliefs meeting on Sunday afternoons. And I wanted to talk about false beliefs around what it means to be a father. And I didn't even know where to start because my relationship with my dad has been so confusing. He was an alcoholic and a drug addict. He was absent, and when he wasn't absent, he parentified me, or he made me his wife, his best friend, his confidant, everything except a father. And then my mom remarried. She's been with her my stepdad since I was 15. And they got married when I was about 25 or 26. And he's like 1,000 times better than my biological father, but he's a rager, and I have to earn his love, and he withholds it like at a moment's notice. And even though he's never parentified me or made me uncomfortable sexually, like, he's still so mean. And there's like this part of me that grieves the fact that this father figure that I have, that's 1,000 times better than my first chance, is still just so mean. And what does it all have to do with emotional sobriety? The way that I run it through my head, right, and the way that I turn it over to God, is that it's not about things happening to me. It's happening for me. What are the lessons in it? Can I see my stepdad's inner child? Can I have a deep compassion for him? My husband and I, we have 3 children. I have twins, excuse me, that are going to turn 7 on July 4th. And that's just incredible. And then I have my like little miracle baby that will be turning 2 on August 18th. And so I get to witness my husband being a father, and he's a really good dad. And it's very healing watching him show up for them in ways that are easy and ways that I request that aren't that easy. But it's supportive, and it's kind, and it's loving. And that is who my husband is. And then who I make him out in my head is that he's like selfish and dismissive, and he doesn't care about me. And I go there. And that's from like my own wounds and my own fears. So he was out of town for 5 days. He left last Sunday, and he came back Thursday morning. And then he's so tired. And so, yeah, like, I think he's supposed to come back home. And now, like, I don't have to do anything because I've been holding the fort down for 5 days. And that's not the reality. The reality is that he was really tired, and he had to take care of himself. And then my baby got sick and was throwing up all Thursday night. And he let the cat out, and the cat hasn't come back home yet. And that was Friday morning at 3 a.m. The cat got out, and we haven't seen her since. And I would really like to blame him. Like, how could he have done that? Even though I know, like, his efforts were on cleaning throw up, right? And it's not his fault, but I want to go there, right? And really, the whenever an emotion is big, or I am faced with my powerlessness, my instinct is to go into pity, being a victim, and blame. And that somehow that makes me feel powerful, right? And instead of the reality that things happen, and that it's unfortunate, and like, oh, it's sad, and it's sad because it's sad, I go into this storytelling that helps me get angry and helps me avoid. And it's like, how could he do that? What's wrong with him? How come he didn't walk around the house? He should have made it his priority to get her. And now this cat's wily. She disappeared for 4 days a couple months ago, right? And then she came back. I mean, we cannot make an animal do something any more than we can make somebody else do it, right? But in order to accept the sadness and the grief of her being okay or not being okay or being gone, means that I have to sit with it. And I have to sit in that moment of just like allowing myself to be sad and allowing myself to accept the powerlessness of the situation. And so then my husband gets sick. And so first it was the baby, then it was my daughter. My son's been okay. And then he got sick, and he's been in bed since yesterday morning. And so Father's Day was about me keeping the kids away from him. And I really wanted to go into that storytelling of how unfair it is. Like, I had the kids all by myself for 5 days, and now he's going to be locked in the room. Like, not only is he sick and not helping, But like my entire bedroom is now a quarantined area where I wouldn't have been sitting on this, well, like a beautiful, amazing balcony. I would have had somewhere else to go. But now he's taking it, right? And his illness, like I don't have this like default of compassion where it's like, oh, like he has a throw up bowl next to his bed. Like he's like groaning if I can go get him a cold Gatorade. Like he's like, I'm so sorry you don't feel good. That's so awful. I go into this place of like, I can't believe he's not helping. Now it is so inconvenient to not have this room to go do this meeting in. And without recovery, the story is real. Without my ability to see myself in that fourth step of who do I think I am and who am I afraid to be, all of the storytelling becomes the story, not a story. And I can't see the reality in it. And I've got all of these voices, right? I've got my entire committee that's really cheerleading me into how wronged I've been because he got the flu. And I hear myself say it, and there's like a part of me that's like, oh my God, it's so ridiculous. But it's also just so real. And so prior to recovery, really prior to BBA, the story that I would say is that it's not fair that he's supposed to be helping, that I deserve help, that he doesn't want to help me. He doesn't appreciate what I do. And so therefore I'm gonna get mad and I'm gonna tell him and I'm saving it up and I'm boiling and I call it's like the contract. Like he doesn't understand that by not saying this to me, he's really saying that. And all of this is going on and it gets bigger and it gets bigger. And I don't know how to get the relief until I explode. I start criticizing him. I start telling him how sick is supposed to look. Like, don't you know you're supposed to tough it out and get out of bed anyway? And I would make things worse. And that's pretty much a guarantee that I will build myself up into a victim until I explode and I make things worse. And now that I have emotional recovery, what I get to do is I acknowledge the fact that I'm feeling overwhelmed. I acknowledge the fact that it has been hard taking care of sick kids, well, just kids and then sick kids for the past week, and that it's a lot, and it's a lot because it's a lot. And two things can be true. He's allowed to be sick in bed and being taken care of, and I can have compassion for that. And I can acknowledge that it's hard. And prior to recovery, not even BBA, the acknowledgement that it's hard would be stuffing my emotions. And I would first, it was food, then later drugs and alcohol, and then food again. And food is such the good analogy because we literally stuff it and stuff it and stuff it. And while I get myself into this emotional like intoxication and take all of these purchases out of my internal drugstore, like so much adrenaline and cortisol, as I really cheerlead myself into being like the most rightest of the right people you've ever met, I then get like out of control and I don't know what to do with it, and so I eat. And now that I haven't eaten in about 2.5 years, then I get busy and I do this like shutdown and I don't sit down and I just keep going and going and going. And I have this really bad back and I will drive myself into like 10 out of 10 pain until I physically cannot do more. And then I can't sleep at night because the pain is so bad. And these are my cycles if I don't ask God into my emotional sobriety. How have I noticed? Like, what was the wake up call in for me to being able to notice that there is a an invisible contract with me and everybody in the world? And that's really from the fourth step. Big Book Awakening's fourth step is such a beautiful way, and especially the way I was taught to do it is looking at my self-esteem and my pride, especially like those two are the most important parts of the entire work, to be honest, for me. And that's like in my self-esteem, like who do I think I am? Right. So if I were to do this as a 10th step or a mini fourth step, I would pull out that worksheet and I'd say, like, I'm resentful at my husband for being sick, for being in bed all day. I'm That was the other thing. We had a big trash pickup for today. All of this extra stuff in the yard. And he's the man, and he's supposed to take care of it. And he's in bed. So now here I am, like lugging everything up to the driveway. And I spent about 5 hours on it yesterday. And part of me was like throwing a pity party, and another part was like feeling heroic because of the story I got to tell myself of like, this poor pretty princess is enslaved in this garden as she's pulling out junk, and it's so sad, right? And I get to like feel all of this rightness of how unjust it is, and look at the world, look at what I have to do. And it like rallies me. And then, of course, being like overly productive releases some internal drugs that make me feel better than. And that was like the high that I was on all day yesterday of like, my poor Haven has to get calluses on her hands. She only works out at the gym. She shouldn't have to work out in real life. And I just. The story is unbelievable, and it's a story, right? And I get to laugh at myself. It's not real. But I look at it and I go, who do I think I am? I think I am somebody that gets served, that only her emotions matter, that the house revolves around her, that my husband should have done better planning. Like, he should have had all of these things ready to go before he got sick. Like, he shouldn't have waited until the last minute, because now he waited. He waited, not me, not us, but him. He waited to get all this stuff ready. And look at how it affects me, right? And so now I'm like, now I'm resentful, and now I've got a really good case against why I get to be upset, or why I get to be better than, or why I've been harmed. And so I look at that, and I really do, like, there must be a part of me that really thinks I am above doing the service for the house if I'm getting upset with the fact that I'm doing it, right? And this like little girl that's stomping her feet, it's not fair. Going like, wow, like there is a part of me that doesn't want to have to show up. There's a part of me that just thinks that because my dad was a piece of crap and then my stepdad is so mean to me that I shouldn't have to, that the world owes me, right? And then there's that phrase of like, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? And maybe the world does owe me. It certainly was atrocious the way that my father was to me, and my stepdad. Nobody should be called names by a father figure. You know, like those things are sad, but it doesn't put me in the power position of now the world owing me something. But I don't know how to see that without God's help. And then so we go into this pride. And if I inflate the pride times 10, right? Because a normal pride is that like people should see my husband is taking care of me, right? And I go, yeah, that's true. I think that's a good pride. I think that's like a healthy relationship. But I'm an addict. So times it by 10, and people should see my husband doing anything and everything to make sure that I'm okay, even if I don't know what okay means. He should know, even if I don't know. And he should have hired somebody to come over while he was dying in bed so that I didn't have to, right? So I didn't have to lift a finger. And people should see him without needs, to be honest, right? Like that's what's come down to in almost all of my resentments. People should see him as ignoring himself and me being the only person that matters. And like the inner child in me is like, yes, right? But it doesn't lead to happiness. And so what happens is if my husband isn't kissing my feet and making sure that I don't have a care in the world, it must mean that fears column. And that fears column then says, like, you don't mean anything. He doesn't really love you. You're really unlovable. Why would anybody ever do something nice for you? You're gross, right? And so the invisible contract says, if he's not helping me, it means he doesn't like me. Right. If he's not worshiping my every need, then it must mean that I'm unlovable. And so then I retaliate as though he's just told me my fears. And without God, I don't know how to get out of that cycle. Without God, those fears, like what I think he's telling me, right, the invisible words behind it, destroy me. And anybody would want to feel different with that. Anybody would want to eat. Anybody would want to drink. Anybody would want to start creating chaos. I just started the steps for chaos creating, and I'm like, that is me. And so instead, I get to like put my hand on my heart. There's five love languages, and I think that they're all really important, right? But physical touch is one of them. So, put your hand on your heart, a good grounding one, hand on the heart, and then on your breastplate. Breathing into yourself. There's a technique called havening. 5 minutes. Lynn? Okay. That's what I have. All right. The havening, where you stroke your face. And it's very gentle and it gets me back into my body instead of out there into my story, right? And this is like how I feel that God would come and touch a child that's beloved, right? And then using words of affirmation, which is another love language. And it's like you're safe and you're loved and you're worthy. And guess what? Yesterday was hard. It was a lot. 5 hours of manual labor is not what my days normally look like. And so I am allowed to change things around. I can absolutely change my schedule so that I honor the fact that I gave away more of my energy than I had planned to yesterday. And that nurturing and that care and that love is only possible through my relationship with God. And so I acknowledge that I go into a story, and that's all it is. It's a story, it's not a fact. My husband is like kind and amazing. There is not a single thing that he's ever said no to me about. It, like even like wild ideas or like conversations. Like he's a good guy, and I'm still a wounded human. And so then I filter all of his kindness through like, but what did he really mean by that? Or I knew it. I knew he didn't appreciate me. And so then I get to go right into that, like, okay, Haven, just because you are not the pretty princess of the house with the only, like, and the only person that matters does not mean that you're a POS. It does not mean that you're worthless. Like, it is neither of those things. Like, his feelings matter as much as mine do. And so I get to see, like, luckily, most of like the resentments happen just in my head. So very little amends have to be made now.
Haven, that's
Do I still?
time.
Oh, I thought it was 25 minutes.
Nope.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Sorry about that. All right, let me wrap up. So anyway, so I take the emotions. I am able to acknowledge the fact that I am not the only person that matters, and I am not nothing. And then I am able to give it to God and keep. I don't want to say keep the pain in because that's not right. It's hard because it's hard, and God will walk me through all of it. I don't create the chaos even if I'm feeling the emotions. And I get to have peace. And so yesterday, despite the chaos, it was still peaceful. And so thank you for letting me share. And I apologize for my timer confusion.
Hang on, I'm just going to stop this recording.